It's Marketplace Tech for Monday, July 11th. I'm Adrienne Hill in for Ben Johnson. If you've been online in the last week, you've probably been bombarded with ads for Amazon Prime Day, when Amazon tries to create its own version of Black Friday. In spite of widespread complaints that last year's promotion amounted to an online garage sale, think sales on beard growing oil and dog clippers, it was a success for the company. And this year's repeat got us thinking more broadly about how shopping online has changed the shopping experience. We called up Barry Schwartz. He's a newly retired professor from Swarthmore College, and he studied the psychology of choice.
The world of online shopping both creates and solves what's become a massive problem for consumers in the 21st century, and that is this overwhelming amount of choice. The virtue of online shopping is that smart marketers, even if they have thousands of options available, can be smart enough to only show you six.
Are there retailers who do this filtering better than others? I find myself still pretty overwhelmed when I'm shopping sort of generally online, unless I know specifically what I want.
Well, sites like Netflix basically know which things to show each customer because they know what you choose, what you watch, how much of it you watch. I think Amazon does a pretty good job recommending at least books. It's certainly possible to do an extremely good job if you take advantage of the data that you have available, which may creep consumers out.
What are the opportunities out there for non-Amazon retailers? How do they make a space for themselves, either online or in the world?
Well, the thing to do is to be the boutique alternative to Amazon, which is sort of Walmart. You know, you just have the things that you know your customers want.
Where do you do your shopping?
I try as hard as I can to do as little shopping as possible. I'm much more interested in consequential choices, although the same sort of thing has happened. Tinder has made choosing romantic partners sort of the same as, you know, shopping for jeans on Amazon. There's an unlimited set of possibilities. You know, the Amazon thing is the tip of a very large iceberg, I would say.
Barry Schwartz is a newly retired professor of psychology from Swarthmore College. Thanks so much.
Great talking to you.
There's nothing quite like settling down on the couch with a plate of nachos and turning on a football game. Coming this fall, it won't just be the big broadcasters and the NFL Network showing games. You'll be able to stream Thursday night matchups on Twitter. Recode is reporting Twitter is also in talks with the NBA, with Major League Soccer, and the Turner Cable Network for digital rights to other sports events. For more on why, we called up Recode's Kurt Wagner. He's senior editor of social media. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Can Twitter afford to do this? I mean, are digital rights just that much cheaper than broadcast rights?
Well, right now, yes. I mean, we saw that they were able to secure 10 Thursday night football games for this coming fall for $10 million, whereas the traditional TV rights for those same Thursday night games, I believe NBC and CBS are paying $450 million for the whole season. But at this point, it's kind of like, how can we, you know, as Twitter supplement what is already happening on TV? And for that, because it's new, because we don't really know what that even looks like, I think people are willing to experiment at a lower price.
From the perspective of these leagues, is Twitter the best platform for this sort of programming?
Well, I think they offer something unique, which is that they actually have people talking about the programming as it's happening, right? I think Facebook wants to be that. I don't think that Facebook is there. I mean, I know when I'm watching the Super Bowl, for example, I go to Twitter if I want to see what people are talking about. I don't go to Facebook. I don't go to Amazon. Twitter is kind of the guinea pig that's getting the first crack at a lot of these deals, and they're being aggressive about it.
And why would traditional broadcasters hand over these digital streaming rights? Why not try to do it themselves? I mean, it seems like years from now, this could jeopardize. If I can watch my NBA game on Twitter, why would I need a cable package?
I think what you're going to find, at least for now, is that a lot of them hand over fringe content. So the idea of maybe a pregame or postgame analysis, right? It's not actually intruding on the actual game footage, which is the most valuable and the thing that everyone wants to see. Instead, it's drumming up excitement for the event. Whether or not they can prove out that that's true, we don't know. But, you know, I'm sure we'll have a better idea at the end of football season when CBS and NBC take a look and say, was this a good move for us to let Twitter in on the action, or did they cannibalize some of our viewers?
5 years from now, how do you think we're going to be watching sports?
I think still watching live sports is such a communal activity that you're going to want to be in the living room or in the bar or wherever it may be watching with other people. And I don't see that happening on a phone or tablet. So I certainly think streaming could be the way that we, you know, kind of get those games, but I don't see the television itself necessarily disappearing in the next 5 years.
Kurt Wagner is senior editor of social media at Recode. Thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Online shopping has changed the way we buy. Digital streaming has changed the way we watch. Intrepid marketplacer Levi Sharp went out on the streets of New York to ask people for their thoughts about what they'd like to see change next and what they'd like to stay the same.
Since I like work in fashion, they're talking about like making mirrors or whatever that will try on the clothes for you. And the next 10 years, like, it's just going to be less for ourselves to do, and like technology will just essentially take over daily tasks.
I already spend more time staying at home comparing 10 years ago, and now more technology, I'll probably stay at home more.
I'd like to see something that allows people to focus more, not in terms of being productive, like making a to-do list, but reestablishes or strengthens a conversation around issues rather than just kind of adding more voices to the fray, which I kind of feel like is what's happening now.
That was Sarah Bonner, Yising Kai, and Veronica Muyo. Let us know what you think. What's the technological future you hope for or you fear? We're on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Adrienne Hill, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.